Good evening. What shall we look at this evening? Star 6 to unmute, please.
Hello, this is Pasha.
Hey, Pasha.
Wow, it's amazing to be with the group this evening. As I'm going
to. Would you hang on one second? If you're not Pasha and you have not muted yourself, would you please mute yourself, please, by pressing star 6 or mute on your phone? We can hear some background noise. Thank you. Go ahead, Pasha.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm glad to be here with the Sangha and the group. My work schedule changed, and I'm not able to participate live with the morning show. This is the opportunity to share and I feel like to participate live, which I'm deeply grateful for. And also I learned the morning show is also available as a podcast, which is, which is very convenient and supportive way to listen, you know, when not on the show. And the podcast shows, like, which shows I heard and haven't heard and remembers where I left off last time. So it's a great way to plug in, and I've been following successfully every show since the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Well, technology is so wonderful, right, Pasha, because it allows for participation. And the thing that you're pointing to, which I think is so important, is your work schedule changes, and so you can't participate live. But that doesn't stop your participation, right? You're looking for another way to benefit from listening to the show and following along with Sangha, and you found another way to participate live. And that's such a triumph, right? Because for some people, you might just go, okay, well, I can't do this, and so that's that. But when there's that willingness to be part of, then we participate in whichever way is available to us.
Yes, exactly. And that's also part of the year-long retreat theme and a part of the, what's going on right now is, like, how can we participate in these different, opportunities, in this situation. How can we, and what I'm seeing is life always finds a way to include us in participation.
Yes. Yes. Life, say more about that. And let me reflect that before you do, right? Because what I heard you say, right, Pasha, is something that we've been looking at in practice, where everything that the voices say is no, don't do this. This is wrong, you're wrong. It's always a no. So it's actually against participation. And so what we're training to do is to say, yes, all right, this way was what used to be, but it's not available now. But let my attention be on how to make it work. Let my attention not be on how to find out how it's not working anymore.
Yes. Life is always and. Here's a new way to participate.
Exactly. Yeah. And we just have to be present for where life is pointing. Because life knows whatever way it is, right? Life is present to life. Only conditioning is sitting there going, I don't want this to be the case. I want to participate my old way, right? But the old way didn't want us to participate. So, Yeah.
And for me, the new beginning was, starting this new job in a completely different environment. It's all remote, and I only saw my coworkers once on interview, and it starts right when the show starts. So you know, how can this new beginning be included? You know, so this is another subject of my kind of retreat, participating in a new job and participating with Sangha in a new way, and participating in a social distancing, whatever is going on in the world. So everything has changed, and there are ways to participate in everything.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, there are ways to participate in everything, no matter, even though all of the circumstances are different. Because that brings us to that point I think you're pointing us to, right, Pasha? Because all it takes is for us to show up wholeheartedly for whatever it is, and that's really participation. The circumstances are completely irrelevant. The point is that we show up. Then we're part of, right?
Yes.
And it allows us to see that. It's not the how of the participation or the circumstances that are our participation. It's us showing up, having our attention here on this here now, that's truly the participation. So we can participate anywhere, because all it takes is for us to be there or be here.
Yes, be there. And for me, I'm always falling short of a conditioned standard, you know, and I'm not seeing it always happening. So there's no need to listen to that, because I'm always going to fall short of, like, how I should have participated and what should have I done. But what I'm looking at is where my feet are, you know, and what's my next step, you know, what that I can take in the spirit of participation. And I always see there is always, there's always an opportunity to make a next step.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you're noticing that the conditioning is always telling you that it doesn't tell you you're not participating. It tells you you're not participating enough. And if you weren't paying attention, you would believe it. But you're watching it.
Yes.
What your practice is to turn your attention to your feet, to being back here, present. And that gives you a sense that not only are you here participating in life, you can then look to see how you can participate in what's being offered now.
Exactly.
And there's always a way.
Yes, there's always a way. Gesho.
Gesho. Such a wonderful feeling, isn't it?
Jan? Marco? Hi. I'm looking at in the last couple of days, very recently, just looking at a process going on with a certain content that ties in with what I chose for looking at beginnings. And what my focus has been is to approach any new task with enthusiasm and curiosity, which has been just really helpful. sort of changed it totally changed the lens, which was the intent, of course. But today I read something that I thought was sort of pretty alarming. The content was a Supreme Court decision that I thought was one of the most insensitive, out-of-touch things I've seen in a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of upset. I did a two-handed recording. What I keep getting in response is you have a voice, you know. You have a voice. How are you going to express that? And then what I saw, what this is in the process, that rather than getting upset, if I'm going to look at this with enthusiasm and curiosity, how do I express that voice? And basically enjoy enjoy it rather than condemning something or having judgment mm-hmm. about or what, you know, however that might be characterized.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, so it's been fun to see. Yeah, just to see it in a new light.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, and what I heard in that light, Jan, is that it's how practice comes through for us, right? So there's an incident that happens. There's an upset that happens, which actually puts us in touch with whatever's going on for us, right? How much we care, something that's not acceptable that needs to be brought back into the circle of acceptance, whatever it is. It's that mm-hmm. whatever is painful and whatever is difficult to me is always what's outside of love that needs to be brought into it, brought into love, into acceptance, right? But we don't know that unless we're challenged to see that something is outside, that something's outside that circle. So when right. something like that Supreme Court content shows up, it's an opportunity for that exploration of what's going on for me, what's my process here, what do I need to be freed from, what do I need to bring into unconditional love and acceptance, and the very action I would project of doing the two-handed recording exercise was an indication of curiosity and enthusiasm, because it wasn't just a condemnation, it was a willingness to explore that. So different perhaps flavor of curiosity, and then after doing the two-handed recording exercise, come to that beautiful place of now I can actually redirect the attention and look at it from a place of my practice focus.
Yeah, that was really helpful because I hadn't seen the enthusiasm and curiosity applied to the two-handed recording, but when you say it that way, yes, because that's what we're doing every time. Mm-hmm. We're trying yeah. to see what's going on here, and mm-hmm. What's going on to see as much as possible.
Right, and then that may not have been in conscious awareness that that's what was going on. And then when you're done, we're freed up from the upset or the anger or the terror or the frustration or the condemnation to be disidentified enough now to actually intentionally, through conscious awareness, approach something with curiosity and enthusiasm in the inquiry. Mm-hmm. And it's really, really fun.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so interesting because as you said that, I could feel the resistance coming up. So there's still more to be explored. Because mm-hmm. if I, in this example, if I were to take action of any kind, whether, you know, however that shows might play out, I want it to be from a place of clarity, not of mm-hmm. judgment and so forth. So mm-hmm. yeah, it's like everything else. That I just have to stick with that, mm-hmm. getting as clear as I can before anything would be done. Because otherwise it's not coming from the caring from which it all originated, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that the being in touch with the process of caring or compassion. I don't want to give anything away, but Sherry's next newsletter article is all about this. But being in touch with the caring and the compassion, which is the origin of the process of whatever the reaction was, right? That to be in touch with that place from which the action comes. And two other things that drop in for me on a process level, right, Jan, which this whole exploration is couched in curiosity and enthusiasm, right? So resistance comes up and you redirect to curiosity and enthusiasm as the way to explore the resistance, not to transcend it, but to explore it. It becomes the redirect, the movement back from which you can explore anything, right?
Yes.
And so when you do that, There are things that we haven't seen that come up in awareness, and one of them that dropped in for me was when you said, well, I don't know how this voice gets expressed, right? And so, and there's a desire for it to be expressed from that place of caring, and there's a whole exploration of an inquiry with curiosity and enthusiasm around that. But there's simply the fact that you said what you said today on this call, which is an expression of that voice. And so there are so many ways in which that voice can get expressed. And perhaps what curiosity and enthusiasm in the exploration reveals is all of the flavors of that we don't see.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, that's all really helpful. And I will continue looking. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jen.
This is Tim.
Tim.
Hi. This has really been great. That last discussion was really helpful. And I've been looking at something that has come up around the morning show last year yet practice around beginnings. And I guess the best way to say it is just to say it. It's an old belief system. Like, I was looking at beginnings and saying the top encouragement dropped in, right? Like, and it came up around recording and listening, and something that was revealed to me at Sangha last Sunday was, you know, when conditioning gets a hold of my recording and listening, it's all about perfection and doing it right.
Mm-hmm.
And what I discovered is my job is really just to encourage the practitioner.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought of this, I have this belief system that I'm sure is not uncommon, belief that, you know, if my parents had just encouraged me, I would have done fill in the blank.
Uh-huh. Encouraged, Tim, appropriately, you would have achieved something. Uh-huh.
Right. So I have that. There's that belief system. What dropped in around that, though, is in order to have that belief, resentment, experience, I have to believe that encouragement means something. I have to believe that encouragement works. And I thought, it sounds so simple, but I can do that now. That's just my only job. Like, if I believe that encouragement will allow me to do anything that I want, then I simply have to be the one that provides encouragement to this person.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's making any sense at all.
Oh, absolutely. So I would project that what you're seeing is it's an end run on conditioning, right? Because what it's telling you is, if you were only encouraged, you could have achieved something. And so the focus of the attention is on, you didn't get encouragement, which is why there's something wrong with you. And that's a very discouraging conversation to live in.
Sure.
It's not encouraging, it's completely discouraging. And what that kind of discouragement does is actually not let us do anything.
Right.
Right? Because you're constantly being told, the reason you're not doing anything is because you're discouraged, and that's where the attention is. It's not on working on encouragement so that you can do something, right?
Exactly.
And so what you suddenly saw was, oh, well, if encouragement is going to make a difference, then I can be encouraging. I can be encouraging in many ways. First of all, I don't have to listen to a discouraging conversation. I don't have to live in a belief system that may or may not be true. Probably not true. And it's completely irrelevant, because if any encouragement needs to happen, I can be that person to the human being and to the practitioner. And it will work, because it does.
Yeah. But what's funny is, so I found myself in a place of gratitude for this, like, ancient, unhelpful belief system, because in a way, it helped me realize that, oh, you know, encouragement is, that's what's important to this person or to some person inside there. Encouragement is important, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I can do that. Like, I do that all day long. like for other mm-hmm. people and for, you know, my kids or my spouse or something. So I see that I already have that skill, and mm-hmm. it really simplified really kind of lit me up around recording and listening, because all of a sudden, well, I could do that. You know,
mm-hmm.
why didn't
mm-hmm.
you just say so? You know, but
yeah, yeah.
Which
so there's
did,
a lot of gratitude for seeing, and I would say, right, Tim, that we don't know what to attribute the sight to, but we could be grateful for
right.
the seeing. You saw through the belief. It doesn't necessarily
right.
extend that the belief is the reason you saw it. You just saw
yeah.
through it, and what you saw is a reflection of the truth. Which is, this is a, it's not a conversation that says you can't do something. You know, you were not worthy or you didn't accomplish or that's, it's not a discouraging conversation. The insight that you received was, well, all you need to do is encourage the practitioner and, oh, wait, that's encouragement, which is what I do already. It's something I know how to do, and not only do I know how to do it, I'm good at it. And that
right.
completely shifts my enthusiasm for what it is that I'm doing in practice, which is not perfection, and listening to a conversation of how imperfect your recording and listening is, but that you're in the process of encouragement, which is not only something you can do, but which you're good at.
Yeah, it really simplified things for
mm-hmm. yeah.
for me.
Yeah. So helpful when we get that reflection, right? We get that guidance that assists us to drop all of those notions that have prevented us from being lit up, as you said, about practice.
Yeah, yeah. It gets, you know, yes, exactly, because those conversations quickly remove me from the point, which is
exactly.
dropping everything else and
yeah.
being right here. And I'm really mm-hmm. amazed at a lot of the conversation. A lot of what I get out of the conversation from the morning shows has been just the simplicity of being as I am and not resisting a bunch of what the beliefs are telling me about myself. And, you know, it's weird. I feel like language, it fails to articulate how I really feel about it, but...
Well, fortunately, you're in a group of, in a room full of people where if you point, we probably could relate. So,
yeah, right.
right? And I know exactly what you're saying. It is hard to articulate the falling away of something that causes us to now know something within quotes that we didn't know before. It's truly
right.
insight. It's an insight.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's a connection. When I feel connected with life, or when I feel that life is just living me, I guess sometimes it's hard to find the words to express that, because it's such an expansive feeling.
It is.
And one of the things I did is I became aware of... I know that conditioning doesn't take a vacation. You know, like when I'm lit up, it's probably on the outskirts someplace waiting for to come back in, right? So I felt, you know, really high, for lack of a better word, after that guidance. And I was thinking about all the things I was going to do, and I heard it. I heard a little voice say, I don't even need to record and listen today, because, you know, this is just so awesome.
Because I'm high as a kite,
awesome. Like,
right?
I have so much energy. And, and I was like, aha.
Yeah, there we go.
So I grabbed the recorder. So I did, you know.
Good for you.
But it was just, yeah, it's funny in a way.
It is. It's funny in a way, and it's such good, it's the experience that we want to trust, right? So there are times when we suffer, and there are times that we don't suffer. When we're not suffering, we know that we can suffer. And when we are suffering, we know we don't have to suffer, right? But in those kinds of expansion, we train ourselves to pay really close attention, because it can be a setup for the awareness to be collapsed if we're not here here in that expansion, right? And so when your awareness is expanding, you watch the voice come in and say, oh, you don't have to record and listen. And you saw it. And that's the time when we want to record and listen, because that recording of expansiveness, we absolutely want when awareness is collapsed. Because it will take us back to that experience. It's the best time to record.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there was a bunch of recordings happened on that Sunday because it was just, oh, the doors were open.
Yeah.
So it was really neat to catch that, catch the bait and not take it.
Mm. Oh, yeah, we're now the hunter and not the hunted, right?
Yeah.
Catch the, see the bait being dangled in front of you and you go, uh-huh, see, you're not going there.
Yeah.
Such a triumphant feeling.
Yeah. Very grateful. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Tim.
Okay.
Penny?
Bye.
Okay. Penny?
I had an experience that's sort of along the lines, I think you're speaking, of just catching a conditioning sleight of hand.
Uh-huh.
That I just was so grateful to catch. So I was... had an experience with some friends and was in a state of real gratitude about them. And there was this shift that I didn't notice at the time to, I was thinking about feeling grateful for how much I valued them. And there was this kind of shift to projecting how much they value me. And what I caught right then was that I was no longer in gratitude.
Uh-huh. So you were in gratitude, and the gratitude expressed itself as an acknowledgement and appreciation of value for your friends, and you were present enough to notice that the thought shifted to how it was about you being valued by them, and you noticed the gratitude was absent.
Yeah, that was just so interesting that it, and what I... You know, it was one. You know, we sometimes talk about how conditioning will take something and replace it with something less, and then we're expected to be satisfied with that. And so it felt like one of those compensations because you know, it's sort of nice on the one hand to think that people value you, but that wasn't what was going on. And I trust that this is actually a very reciprocal relationship and all of that. But that wasn't what was going on. What was going on was a replacement of an authentic feeling with just a slight shift of attention that could seem benign, and I suddenly realized I was not in the place I had been in before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that it was a compensation, and you're so right. You're pointing us to that process of whatever is authentic, when it gets taken over by ego, it, the way we would say it, right, Sunny, it became all about me. And as soon as it becomes all about me, I'm in an ego process and not an authenticity, and it's a takeover. And to notice that it actually feels different. To feel ingratitude and appreciation is very different from being in a benign ego takeover, but being in an ego takeover.
Yeah, I think that it was... that the benign part is what made it feel so slippery. And I noticed it, and then secondly, I just noticed how grateful I was to be able to notice it without anything other than being aware that it happened. I didn't have any, I didn't have any anger about it or any feeling about it. It was just like, oh, I see it. And that was all that was necessary.
Yes, and so we shift back into gratitude, right?
Yeah, that's right.
That there's a noticing of the shift in attention, and then a noticing of that without any self-hate or judgment. And so there's gratitude in the noticing, and we're back to where we were. It's no longer about ego. It's about being in awareness.
Yeah, and it didn't result in getting into some other ego process about the fact that that happened.
Yeah. Yeah, it didn't result in a re-identification.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you, Penny.
Margaret?
Margaret.
Hello. This is such a helpful conversation. So I've been looking at it's been feeling like since I've been doing the 7 days and came up with what I love, which is just if there isn't something immediately that arises for me to do, I just do what the example is, which was, I think, excitement and enthusiasm, because mm-hmm. I could definitely go to that place. Mm-hmm. And right around that same time, somebody was sharing on the radio show, or, you know, pointing out their process on the radio show, and Sherry said this most amazing thing about how even if the part of us, even if we don't think the part of us that needs to hear something that we're going to say for that benefit of that part, or for all of it, all of, you know, life, that part will still get it, even if we're identified.
Mm-hmm.
It will come through. And that's sort of been what I've been experiencing around, you know, doing this. I do a recording every morning about how excited I am to be alive and enthusiastic, and that I just can hardly wait to get in and begin working on this long project I'm working on. And it feels real.
So, Maria, maybe I'm not making the connection, so you can make the connection for me, but you're doing the example that in the year-long retreat because nothing occurred to you. And so you're able to make that recording every morning in absolute excitement that you can't wait to get into this project. And you brought in that conversation with Sherry. Yes, it was so powerful that even if I'm identified and I'm that I that I'm identified with is resistant to listening to a recording that's telling me whatever it's telling me or offering me, there's some way in which the message is still delivered, it's heard and received by what needs to hear it. So can you make the connection for me?
Yeah, I think so. Because when I read the example, it wasn't something that just it resonated with something I could see wanted in my life.
You weren't aware of it, but because it was available, it resonated for some aspect of you, and so it was sort of echoing what Sherry was talking about as something that is not aware of what it needs. It still responds to that when it's given.
Right, and I think it's also, there's two other things about it. It's like I'm often identified sometimes in the morning, and uh-huh. and there's, so there's that. But there was, we will do for the love of others, what we, mm-hmm. What we're not willing to do for ourselves, perhaps, that we don't mm-hmm. see that.
Mm-hmm.
That somehow seems really involved in that, too, because it feels like I've excluded myself, kind of. It's like it happens so quickly mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. Because of maybe just that super on-the-edge nine thing of outward focus. You know, it's mm-hmm. so obvious. That part seems so obvious, but It as I've looked at that over the years, I've always thought of, wow, who really gets excluded here, too? Mm-hmm. Who's also really being excluded from this? And
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Yeah, so there's an awareness that you're identified in the morning. So to make a recording around excitement, regardless of whether you feel like it or not, draws out the person who's being excluded from this, who is actually excited to do this project and decided to do it in the first place.
Yeah. Who yeah. really does, and I enjoy it.
That's right. Ego doesn't, but I do. And so
yeah.
I'm going to create the support that elicits enjoyment, regardless of yeah. whether ego has taken me over when I wake up into the day. And so at so many levels, the example or the life suggested the perfect practice, right? Because you get
yeah.
to see that there's a way in which the person who is always excluded and who's excited about things can be summoned forth even if she's masked by the identification of an external focus.
Right. Mm. And it feels, I love how it feels to just do that recording about, I'm so excited to be alive.
Because we are, right?
Why do we
let go of all of that ego cupola that says, oh, I don't want to get up and I don't want to be bad and I don't want to do this. It's a very bubbly life force that greets the day.
Yeah. Yeah, it certainly can be.
It certainly can be. Well, in the vein of what we're talking about, it is. We're just not present to it. And so your practice of making sure I get back in touch with what is excited about being alive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and so that got me to sign up. I mean, somewhere in there, I decided I just had to sign up for the recording and listening group class. So I'm doing that as well. And since we aren't going to talk about the curriculum for it, you know what I'm doing every morning too for that. And it's just like, it's so, you know, it all comes together in a wonderful, really helpful, supporting. It's just so supportive of this human.
Mm-hmm. Counting about recording and listening, Margaret.
Yeah. I'm sorry, what did you say about it?
I said we can never say enough about recording and listening and our enthusiasm for it, because truly it's a lifesaver.
It is. It is. Right. And ego would always hide that from me, does not want me to know that. It's like that separation. It's separating me from, it's that same process of not, you know, of doing for the love of others, but not this human.
Mm-hmm. It's exclusive. It excludes you, right? It excludes your, I mean, it is. If you say it's a force of separation, then we can see how it's the barrier between us and everything that is for us.
Right. Right. So I am so grateful. So much appreciation for this practice and Sangha.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much, Itesho. Carolyn. I was so struck by the word in the what we're looking at in the morning class around the glory. And what I was seeing in that today is that life is always saying, I love you. And what I've had the opportunity to do with everything that's going on is to say, I love you back.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it's glorious. That's where it comes full circle, because I get reflected and then I reflect back, which there's just more brightness and more that's seen as being what was pointed to earlier as supportive, and it's just sort of this exponential expansion of what's always been, but which is now visible.
Mm-hmm. You know, the image that dropped in when you said that, Carolyn, is that physics experiment where you put a candle in between two mirrors and it's infinitely reflected.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's sort of the exponential. It's glorious because we see love, we say yes, we give back love. That amplifies the love that gets reflected back to us, which we then reflect back amplified. And then there's just this buildup that's glorious.
Yes. And that's why participation is so glorious, because that's what's happening. Mm-hmm. Each time we say yes and show up, that we get that that reflection amplified.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that participation is the way that shows up, because every time we say yes, we are saying yes to life, right? So life knocks and we respond. And then life knocks, gives us something, and we respond. And that the words are inaccurate for what we're describing, but it's sort of these revolving doors, or a back and forth, or a call and response that elicits that energy that you're pointing to, that experience of gloriousness through participation. Yeah. Saying yes, because that is how we sort of demonstrate to life that we're here. Right?
Yeah. And you know, I just sort of, you know, the great delight that life must take in that. You know, it's just, it's as delighted as we are, because we are it. It's and so I was just looking at how some of my daily activities have changed, but in that light, in that reflected light, everything I'm doing is now my favorite thing to do.
That even though it's changed, that everything is your favorite thing to do, not because it is a favorite thing to do, but because it's done from that perspective you're talking about, within the context of that light.
It's now my it's my favorite way to be loved right now.
Yeah, you know, it's that amazing thing about I think it was Sherry's teacher who says, "What is your favorite rose? It's the rose that's in front of me."
Yeah. So it's just I guess I'm just so kind of love struck.
love struck.
Just sort of kind of almost a little goofy with it, you know, which is, it's so endearing that there can be this kind of response and what was said earlier, all that gratitude, which is another way of saying I love you.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Gratitude, another way of saying I love you. I think it was on the call this morning where Sherry was saying that we have the Messiah conversation about the music, right? That we are that universe. And it's the Alan Watts school too, that we are the universe that is seeing itself in all its glory, and that goofiness is an experience of that, of being slightly drunk on all the love that we're experiencing as what we are.
Yeah. So today I had the wonderful experience of being in the yard and watching this bee just covered in pollen and kind of lurching drunkenly from flower to flower, the buzzing and that, and I just got closer and closer and put my head, it was a lavender bush, and I just put my head as close as I could get, and I could feel that buzzing, that energy, that resonance, and I just thought, that's how I feel.
I'm that bee.
Yeah.
It's a lovely Mary Oliver. I think it's a Mary Oliver poem, or a Basho. I don't know who said this, but there's the bee drunk in that peony, or whatever it is. I'm sure you're responding to the same experience, right?
Yeah. So I just picture,
well,
you know.
Thank you for sharing that, Carolyn, because I think we're all basking in glory right now.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Rebecca? Hey, Ishwini. I'm looking at something that has been a bit of a koan for a long, long time, and it's coming up again around the events of the virus and just things that are going on in the world. And so the koan was something that this old nun said to me many years ago when I was in a line of work that was real social justice oriented. And she commented to me, she was sort of a mentor of mine, and she noticed an attitude that I can have that's sort of like, oh, well, we're all going to die anyway, kind of thing. And
so she noticed you had that attitude, that it doesn't matter, we're all going to, sort of resigned, would you say, or?
I think that's what she was noticing. Uh-huh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that's what she was noticing, where all my colleagues had this, let's go out and fight them kind of attitude, and I was more like, well, you know, I mean, I didn't feel like it was a resigned. I felt like it was more of a maybe yes, maybe no kind of thing. But nevertheless, it has stuck with me all these years. And so I've been sort of watching, you know, well, you know, what is that? Is that here? And I think that's why when Sherry's blog about conscious, compassionate action came out, that was so impactful for me, because it helped me to see that below any of that, let's go fight them or we're all going to die anyway, kind of what is beneath all of that is a deep caring, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I was able to really work with that for, you know, well, when that was articulated, and I practiced with that for a long time. And what I've been seeing lately, as you know, we don't get a lot of the news around here at the monastery, but I do get whiffs of just suffering that's happening, and pain, and tons of upheaval, of course, you know, of people's lives, and I can feel what that nun pointed out happening to me again, you know, sort of a, well, you know, it's, you know, kind of a, and what I'm looking at is it, I don't want to get into noodling, but I can't seem to drop down into that deep caring. It feels like there's a little bit of a block. So I'll stop there.
Mm-hmm. And have you recorded about it, Rebecca?
In a roundabout way, I have. Because what I've seen, well, what I'm seeing now as you ask that, is that it's one of those things that it's not there as a thing. Mm. When I go to record, it's a much more of a peripheral thing.
Yes, well, that's why I asked the question. So here's one of my favorite insights about process, right? So, I can't claim it as mine. I actually read it in a Marianne Miller book. But so when I experience that sense of that intuition of I'm caught in some process, like the mm-hmm. process you're describing, which is, oh, I'm in this process of, yeah, we are all going to die. And I find myself not in touch with what's really going on an emotional level, because I project that the caring for you feels in the body. There's a quality of feeling around it that you're not able to access.
Mm-hmm.
And there's
mm-hmm.
an awareness that there's a block. You're actually aware that there's a block, and that you're not in touch with what's going on for you. Now, it may not be that you're in touch with a feeling, but the process of recording wherever you are, and to continuously record, to talk about it however you talk about it on the recorder, till you break through whatever it is that is the barrier, so that you can get in touch with whatever is going on, is a very powerful way to work with something like that.
Mm.
Because
mm-hmm.
as you're intuiting, it's not about the content. It's not about trying to figure out whether, you know, what does being resigned mean? Or what is that nun telling me? What did the nun mean? Or what was going on for me? And what's really my sense of caring? And how can I move from non-caring to caring or anything else?
Yeah.
It's simply a movement of attention into conscious awareness from a place where it doesn't feel you have access to whatever it is that's going on for you. And when you get there, you'll find out. But you have to get there. It's a shift in attention, a shift in consciousness. And
well,
so,
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Oh, well, don't forget what the and so was going to be, okay? Okay, so what is just dropping in as you're saying that is I'm getting this. Okay, so I will often, like every day, with my recorder, walk around like the garden, especially. I just love walking around the garden, and I'll look for beginnings, you know, because of the year long, and I'll look for this new life. And I found the most adorable little artichokes in the, you know, in the just hidden, just really coming into form. And I find the little snap peas that are on the trellises, and I find all of the poppy, you know, so, and I'm walking around just glowing with all of this, care, you know,
mm-hmm.
all of this caring, looking mm-hmm. for it. And I wonder if that's what you and Margaret were just talking about, that Sherry was saying, that it's said, and whoever needs to hear it gets it. Whether it has, because this has nothing to do with the people that are suffering for the coronavirus or social justice or anything. It has to do with artichokes and snap peas, but it's still caring. You know, I think is that sort of what you're.
That's not what I was pointing to, but it's certainly where you're going. And here's what I hear you saying, right, Rebecca? What you're pointing to is an experience of total presence, of being with life where you are. You're not off in a conversation noodling about what suffering looks like in the coronavirus. It's literally, right? There's no you're present to beginnings in life, in touch with life in one experience. And you're out of touch with that in the other experience. And so what I was pointing to is with the recorder to get back to where you were when you were in front of the artichokes. Because it's not the artichokes that are bringing you that experience. It's the fact that you're here for the artichoke.
Right.
And all I was pointing to is wherever you are in the noodling around whatever that person said, holding it in a koan, you're not present. And so what the recorder would assist you to do is to drop out of wherever the mental space you're in to being here for you to see what's there. And what's there might have something to do with the koan you are holding, or it might have to do with being present to the artichokes and getting back the delight.
Uh-huh. I know there's a lot in what you just said, and the reason I know that is because I'm getting fuzzy, and I'm going to go back and listen to that part. Because there's something right around that recording and listening strategy that you just laid out that I can tell I'm missing. But no worries. That's why we're recording it. Thank you. That's going to be really fun to explore. It really is pointing, I think, at the difference between the noodling process that happens and just the presence that the recording gets us to.
If noodling is couched as a koan, you're a great Zen practitioner.
If the noodling is what?
Couched as a koan, then you're a great Zen practitioner, right?
Yeah, really. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Phil.
Hello.
Hi. This conversation's all of these have been reminding me of just, you know, different things I've been looking at or that have been just coming, that I've been seeing. You know, I love the last week of the class, the whole time. Always this is my favorite week. And I think the last is, I don't know if it's the last three of our assignments have just, for me, just been absolutely amazing to look at, you know, maybe it's partly because of the quotes or whatever, but I mean, it's like, you know, be the eyes of the universe. I mean, that's just amazing. And the thing that they've been reminding me of is this, and what I hang on to, especially during these days, is the quote that, one of the quotes I like from Julianne of Norwich, and it's the one that says, all shall be well, for there is a force of love moving through the universe that holds us fast and will never let us go. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that one, that, and with the quotes we've just been having and what I've been looking at because of these quotes has just been an amazing, and probably just the place where I am right now, it's just been an amazing experience, I guess I would say, just because of feeling so full of gratitude and enjoyment that everything just sparkles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right now, you know, it won't stay forever, but that's just kind of...
Well, we don't have forever. We just have now, right, Phil? So,
right,
we
just
we
have
fully
now.
Enjoyed. Right.
Yeah.
And, you know,
so, go ahead.
Well, what I was projecting on a process level here is simply that our 7 days are focused on training ourselves to have attention on awareness, right? They're just different
mm-hmm.
ways in order to do that. So glory of God, glory of the universe, or life force expressing through us the vitality of it, or the
mm-hmm.
friendliness of the universe, or in the quote that you just mentioned, the life force of love that's threaded through everything. Where's the attention? It's on love. It's on glory. It's on friendliness. It's on, and that's where we're training ourselves to be, right? So how can it not be a place of pure enjoyment and happiness and delight? Because that's where the attention is. And so we spend the first couple of... Sorry, go ahead.
Well, yeah, I just wanted to say yes.
Yes. Well, we need to spend the first couple of times in that year long to assess the process of ego that stops us from being where we need to be. And once we cultivate that awareness, we want to train to have the awareness on being.
Yeah, and the one about, you know, being the eyes and the ears of the universe, I mean, that one is just, to me, the just what is, you know. I mean,
mm-hmm.
it, and I think I came, that's developed for me in the love letters. And, I mean, I just, think those are the, I mean, if people just did those for the rest of their life, that's, you know, that's it. But because it, you know, I begin to just see that, like what, you know, that the Alan Watts quote, that that's all I am.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and it's all of me, and so that's just, what is this being? And
we have to get to Carolyn's state of goofiness, right? Right.
Yeah, it's like Carolyn's. Yeah, exactly. And it's just,
yeah.
It's just amazing. You know, I, you know, walking around, which I'm now able to do a bit outside, and just being so excited about just being able to do that. And just to see what I see and know that it's coming through me. Whatever I'm seeing is just coming through me. And coming through me. I guess maybe that Carolyn was saying, I don't know, remember, but just kind of a circular thing, you know? It just, circular.
Yeah, it's coming through you. It's being seen through you, and what is seen is you. or is all of you. And it's a marvelous reflective process, right? Reflective amplification process. And I think, right, Phil, that we're so trained to see what is not, because we see through the eyes of ego, that as
yes,
we practice, those lenses shift to seeing through the eyes of love, through the love letters, and through all of the training that we do, and to be able to see life as life sees itself. Oh, isn't that glorious?
It is glorious, yes. And back, just a little bit, when we're back to that quote of Julian of Norwich, it's just that, for me, that has been such a thing to hang on to as far as faith, you know, and trust, is that life force is there, and I know, and I think the good news with this practice is I know it's there. And it's and I know it's moving through the universe, despite, you know, what maybe circumstances like these days are, you know, giving us, that the life force is there, and a life force of love. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's such an important point, right? So that quote, such as the quote that you're referencing, is faith, right? So when we mm-hmm. don't know the experience, we still have faith in it. And that's what causes us to seek the experience. And then when we seek the experience, faith is no longer what we don't know that we seek, but it becomes our experience.
Yeah.
Now I know it's true. I'm not in the faith of seeking what I know is true, but don't know yet. But now it's my experience that it is. It's a wonderful shift of faith, right?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. And so anyhow, thank
well,
you.
Well, and if I may say one other thing,
yes,
Phil, that
please do.
You said that what a situation like you're pointing to, a situation which doesn't make sense to me, that feels mm-hmm. in all particulars awful or dreadful, or it should not be.
Mm-hmm.
The knowing that love is what is interweaved through the universe, and having an experience of faith that has caused us to know that, now allows us to have the faith to accept that we may not know what the love is doing in the context of what's terrible,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't cause me to deny that it's still love.
Right, because it's the mystery, and the mystery is love.
That's right.
And love is the mystery.
I might not know, but I don't question it.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, this might be because of the time of the, you know, this week is called Holy Week, and I think every minute and every minute is holy, but that's what this week's called. And you know, we're heading towards Easter, and there's a whole thing about, let's see, you know, he died and then went to hell or something, and then went through hell and then went to heaven. There's some kind of scripture passage like that. And I think I know from a certain place, not known in my ego, no, but just kind of experienced that we do have to die and go through hell to get to it, to get to that faith
mm-hmm.
we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that the cycle of resurrection is true. We go die,
yeah.
And that's a painful process in order to, you know, we go get crucified because we get to the other side.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And have
yeah.
to have that faith through the crucifixion.
Exactly.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
right.
thank you so
Phil.
Much. Thank you.
This is Michael.
Michael.
That conversation reminded me of another favorite quote of mine from the same Julian of Norwich. All shall be well, and all shall be well, and all manner of things shall be well.
Mm.
And I'm sure I heard that through practice. It just reminds me of these times and this too shall pass, and just grateful for this conversation and this practice and showing up and participating.
Yeah, it is such a wonderful way to direct the attention. Right?
Yeah.
That I don't know how it will be, but it will be well.
Mm-hmm.
Because from here, there's nothing wrong. I don't understand it, but I'm here for it, right? That's our opportunity. No matter how it is, I'm here for it.
Yeah, that I can show up and participate and be present. And the insightful, creative thing I was going to say just went out of my mind a few seconds ago. So,
well, if it comes back, let us know.
Yeah. What was it? It'll come to me. But I do, I know what I was going to say. So during these times for me of changed schedule and stuff, I've been getting a little more exercise and a little more cardio exercise.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the cardio sort of calms down my whole system and takes away energy that conditioning would use for anxiety or noodling or... So I noticed that in the body, and I feel that, and I'm very grateful for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's why we ask people to dance, right, Michael? That there's the energy that is there, that's available to us, is get siphoned off to maintain ego, or is
weakened
for life force. And you're noticing that increased exercise allows the energy to be much calmer because it's not given over to conditioning.
Yeah. And it's something about cardio in particular that, like getting enough of that, it changes the breathing, you know, temporarily or for a few hours or for the day. And there's what the body needs. And as you say, it takes away extra energy that would be used by conditioning.
To notice that the body actually loves it.
Yeah.
All those endorphins.
Thank you, Ashwini.
Thank you, Michael.
Yeah.
We have a few more minutes if there's anyone else.
Hi, this is Justin. Hey, just super quick with these 2 minutes. I wanted to give my appreciation for the Reflective Listening Buddy program, which is coming to an end for the quarter. And that was my first time participating. And, yeah, there's a lot to see there with listening. I guess I'll make this really quick, but silent reflection ended up being very, very, very helpful during that program.
You do have time to say more. So silent reflection ended up being very, very helpful. Say more.
Yeah. Like during my first couple of calls, I saw myself in a conversation about what I should reflect and what I shouldn't reflect, which never ends well, as my buddy was talking. And then I remember...
present to actually what you can reflect, right?
Exactly, right.
Yeah.
And I remember from doing the Don't Suffer, Communicate retreat, I think it was you that gave the tip to silently reflect in your mind when someone else is talking, and you said you do it all the time, and I started giving that a go, and it made things way simpler. And when I was able to do that, a lot of the time it was just there when it was time to reflect.
Exactly. So that when... we don't give our attention to conditioning, to the conversation that's going on, that's trying to decide what to reflect. We're actually present for what the person is saying, and presence and awareness can retain anything and reflect it back. It's that marvelous place, right? We talk about, Justin, that awareness does not need someone to be aware. Awareness doesn't need anyone to be, you know, anyone to reflect. It can reflect quite adequately, thank you. Right?
Yes.
Everything that's being said.
Yes, yes, so much. And it's so different against that conditioned belief that we have to think of what we're going to say when someone else is talking, which is just, it's not helpful, right? I guess you could say
not
that.
At all helpful. And that's so true. It's such a good thing to see that we're conditioned to believe that I must think about what I'm going to say back. And actually, we don't. In fact, it's not at all helpful. It just prevents us from being present to actually what was being said and to the life impulse that absolutely knows what to say, right? That's what you discovered, that once you sort of put conditioning offline, life was perfectly capable of accurate reflection.
Yes, so much better than the conditioning. Not even comparable, right?
Yeah, not even comparable.
Okay, yeah. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Justin. Well, I guess we should say goodbye. We have a couple more minutes, but we'll probably likely go over if we do. So thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Deep gratitude.